Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. I'm your host Shanae, and today I am here with Selena. How are you today, Selena?
I am good, at you?
I laugh though. Why did you laugh like that?
Adulting is ghetto, but what's new?
Right, adulting is very ghetto, and life is ghetto, but you know, we could push through by the power of God.
Amen, hallelujah.
Just gotta have faith. Gotta have faith in the process, okay? So, there's quite a few things going on, and it's like two or three things that I wanted to touch on today, which is CARICOM, NIV, and then we had a protest that happened. So those are the main things that I want to touch on today. So first I want to start with CARICOM. So the Bahamas is hosting the 44th CARICOM this year at Bahama. And based on discussions that the media had with the Deputy Prime Minister and the Prime Minister, some of the things that they're going to be discussing, well, that they did discuss, were the illegal immigration problem within the Bahamas. They plan to discuss gun violence. I think climate change was still a thing that we're talking about. And it was some other things that I can't remember. Oh, and travel, regional travel, and trying to improve that sector of it. And as a result, I don't know if you guys saw, but on Wednesday, the roads was blocked up. I work a west, and I live south. So it already has taken me like 25 minutes to get to work on a good day. And to be in traffic for forever, well, I decided that morning I actually had to do something that was on the opposite side of town. So I didn't have to wait in traffic for hours, but I still had to wait in traffic for a while. But I saw how backed up it was, and I was like, thank God I didn't come that way, because I literally would have not reached to work until like 12 o'clock, because I have work at 10, and the roads were backed up. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, it was ridiculous. So, no, you work out east, right? You work east, right?
Ma'am. I heard about the horror, so I was thankful that day for that.
Selena, like, I was just like, what in the absolute goodness is happening? And it wasn't until I got to work and I started talking to people, and it was like, oh, CARICOM, and I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't even realize that was this morning. I was like, thank God I had something to do, and I left home like 2 hours. I left home from like 8 o'clock, no, 8:30, to go and do what I had to do. So I had ample time to get to work. And like I said, I was able to duck most of it because I was coming around the back end of it, instead of coming directly onto Gladstone, where there was a lot of traffic. And Gladstone in the morning is already be a mess. So imagine being backed up because of Bahama being blocked off and all type of things. I was just like, yeah, that was very ghetto. So the Deputy Prime Minister, Chester Cooper, was speaking with the media, and he said that one of the things that he hopes that they touch on the sidelines is multi-destinational travel within the region. Now, he said, a week prior to CARICOM, they had a meeting. The tourism branch of CARICOM had a meeting with regional representatives, and there were two representatives that came from the Bahamas that went, and they were discussing how to improve multi-destinational travel within the region, I guess. So that's something that they really want to improve multi-destinational travel, and they hope that, he assumes that that's going to be something that they talk about on the sidelines. And then another major thing that they talked about was immigration, illegal immigration, and the stability of Haiti and their economic and social situation that's been going on. Because as you know, the president of Haiti actually attended the CARICOM or whatever. And one of the first things that the prime minister addressed was the crisis in Haiti. And he said that, I believe we are in vigorous agreement that the crisis in Haiti requires our urgent attention. The turmoil and suffering there continues to worsen. As a near neighbor, the Bahamas is under great strain, and many other countries in our region are also heavily impacted. He then went on to say, we should seek to strengthen our collective response to end the smuggling of guns and drugs, and we must do all that we can to wipe out the misery of human trafficking. So these are the main points that were discussed. And two or three Saturdays ago, we were talking about how the Prime Minister was appealing to nations to help Haiti get back on their feet, basically, or to help basically put the the turmoil to rest, because as you know, a lot of people were fleeing the country and they were coming to the Bahamas, and then they're using the Bahamas, some of them using the Bahamas as a stepping stone in to get to the United States of America. And it was just causing a lot of people, a lot of influx of illegal immigrants, right? So his solution was to try and help Haiti as a region, everybody in the region, help them so that they can basically stop coming not only to the Bahamas but to some other countries illegally, as it's put strain on the countries. So he was staying true to that, and he was addressing that. And I guess soon enough we'll hear, probably hopefully, what their responses were to this and what strategies that they come up with to help mitigate illegal immigration.
I thought it was very I thought it was a noble thing that we were able to host CARICOM this year. But I should really tell you, I guess I didn't know that we were hosting CARICOM as well. And so that kind of shocked me when I heard, I mind you, I saw the flags on the roundabout, especially a West. I saw the flags on the roundabout, but I just didn't know anything about it until I heard it. Heard somebody mention it, and I heard about the nasty traffic. But I getting back to my point, I was really pleased that we're becoming more noticeable, I guess, because it's this the first time in my lifetime, and I sure my mom's lifetime as well, that CARICOM is posted here, hosted here. So I thought that was very that's something noteworthy that we are a small country, but we are, getting up there on the ladder. I think it was also a wake up call to me to become more, I guess, in tune with our local news, because I that was something very big that I literally had no idea about, and nobody who I knew had any idea about, because the only time I even heard it mentioned was due to the traffic, not even to say like, it's being hosted. And so I think we've become like we're so used to hearing about the murders and this and that. I know I personally I stopped listening to the news a lot because it was just very disheartening. Because all you just hear is immigration and murder, this, that. Nothing really, what you want to be filling your head with every day. But I think that it became very chronic, and I know I made a resolution within myself to at least tune in every 2 days or 3 days, to at least, even if it's just scrolling on the news, where the major newspapers headlines, just to get a gist of what's really going on in my country, because I thought that was very, that was a wake-up call for me. But once again, I'm glad that those issues were talked about, because these issues are stuff that is becoming a financial strain in our country, and that's what CARICOM is really all about. So yeah, that's basically all I have to say on that.
Yes, I pay attention to the news. I read the news. Well, I try my best to pay attention. I'm not someone who necessarily watches the news. I normally just pay attention to the stories on social media, or I check the website. Because I don't have a radio in my car. Well, I have a radio, but it isn't like programmed for the Bahamas, so I don't get local stations or whatever. So I don't get the opportunity to do that. So yeah, I kind of just read in, and I realized that they were coming, right? But like when you know something but it don't click in your brain, and I pass these things on a regular basis, and I was like, these flags are here and they're here for a reason, but I can't remember what the reason is. Then when I saw the sign, I was like, oh, it's CARICOM, and I pass the sign every day, every day. And I was like, I am such a nut. So, but I just, yeah, I agree. Like, you need to pay more attention. But life is so hectic. But young people, please pay attention to the news, because you gotta know what's happening in the country. You gotta know what's happening in the country, even if it's not every day. Even if you just do like a brief synopsis at the end of every week, just go and look through the important stories or whatever. Just stay abreast on what's happening. So, the next thing I wanted to talk about also has to do with CARICOM, right? The Lincoln Main saga continues. It continues.
Lord.
This man is, I love him, he's so persistent. And I have to give him that. He is persistent. He's a persistent man, okay? He's very persistent. So, Toledo, as you guys know, the Coalition of Independence, and I think it was maybe, I think it was 18 protesters out there in total, I think, because I saw some numbers. I saw some saying 14, some saying 18, some saying nearly 20. So I'm going to keep it in that ballpark range. So it was about a dozen, a dozen and a half. A dozen and a half is what, 18, right? A dozen and a half people, right? And they decided to stage a protest at Bahama during the CARICOM, during the CARICOM meetings. And the focus of their protest was immigration, right? So the police had asked them to leave, but Mr. Bean said that he and the other protesters were guests at the hotel. However, the police encouraged them to take their protest to Goodman's Bay, but Bean insisted that their rights to freely assemble were being violated as a result, and him and the protesters were arrested for unlawful assembly. And during a press release, the police said that they did not have the proper authorization to hold a protest. And he said that the police wished to inform members of the public that the safety and security of all diplomats attending CARICOM will be treated seriously and with the strictest enforcement of the law. And I saw some videos and people were saying that they were manhandled or whatever, but it just seems really chaotic to me. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't protest because they have the very right to do so. That is their right, as citizens, as Bahamians, to protest. However, I do understand the police's stance, seeing that you have this big meeting with leaders from all around the Caribbean, right? And we don't know the intent of these protesters, right? And I think they were looking at it as in, okay, we have all these people here. We promised these people that we would, keep them safe. The last thing they would want to happen is for something to pop off, right? So I think that's how they were looking at it, meaning the police. However, I do understand Bean's his right to say that he's gonna protest or whatever. You have all the right to do that, sir. Now, I don't know if you truly have to get a permit to hold a protest. But yeah, but I truly don't think that that was the time or place. I feel like they could have gathered somewhere else, but I guess they went there because that's where people were, and they were trying to make a point, which is technically what protests are used for. So.
I just think that that was reason 2,396 why the Bahamas isn't a real place. I've heard on multiple occasions that yes, we do have the right to protest, but you do have to have a permit to protest. And I mean, we know what Lincoln Baines' objective was by going to Bahama and doing that, because obviously that would get the attention of those who he wants to get the attention of. Because it's basically like airing your dirty laundry out in the open. So you're gonna get that attention you're looking for, because them persons they try and hush you up as fast as possible. I did not see the video. I did heard about it, and I like you, I did hear that they were being manhandled. However, it could have posed as a security threat, and seeing that, like I said in the beginning, this was I know I could be mistaken, but I know this is the first time in my lifetime and as well as my mother's lifetime that we've hosted CARICOM in the Bahamas. And so I just thought that it was, I mean, for me it was distasteful, because given the magnitude of that gathering. However, I guess with persons who are looking for that radical, that radical, what's the word I'm looking for? Course of action. That radical course of action. That's the perfect thing. I just thought that that could have even be times better. And like you said, if your objective was to really, protest and whatever the case may be, it wouldn't matter where you are doing it. I guess, like I say, it depends on who your audience really is. And he knew that, if he was in that place, he would have, I guess, gotten the attention that he wanted. But it seems like, I don't know, he's one to really stir the pot. I could say that. He knows how to mash some corns. And so I just, for me, I guess I'm more of not so much a like, actionist, but I believe that you could get more done from, a less controversial approach. And that's all I have to say on that. But like you said, I must say that he's very persistent, and he knows just when to appear to make a scene. That's all I could say.
Yeah, like you said, he's a more radical. I think he's more of a physical, hands-on type of adora activist. I may even go as far as to call him a vigilante. But I guess that's everyone is different. It takes other people to make the world go around. And if that's how he thinks problems should be handled, then hats off to him. It wouldn't be the way that I do it. I think other ways could be tried first before we resort to that, but that's his right as a
Indeed.
person. He has the ability to think the way that he wants, so he has the freedom to think the way he wants and express himself the way he wants. His deputy leader said that he was still arrested on Thursday afternoon. He was still in police custody, and I believe in 2022 he was also arrested for unlawful assembly. So I don't know why he just don't like put in for a permit. But I don't know, maybe he feels as though they're probably not gonna give him the permit anyway. So he probably just goes about it and does it anyway. So I guess that's how he's thinking.
Could be,
But
could be.
so I guess that would kind of make sense, because I honestly wouldn't see them giving him a permit for real. I ain't gonna lie. They might try silence him for truth. So I guess he just decides that, I'm just gonna do what I want when I want, how I want. But you've to understand that when you do that, now it's consequences. So there's a reaction for every action that you take. So you decided to go and protest. The police decided to ask you to leave. Didn't want to leave, so they arrested you. Now, whether that's wrong or right or whatever, that's based on the law and whoever you if. You were to go to trial, whoever judge and jury use it before would have to decide that. But yeah, that's just my two cents on that. Like I said, I think it may just want to stir the pot. And maybe he feels like that's what we need. Maybe he feels like the main people have been decided. I don't know what the reason is. That I wanted to talk about was NIB. So I don't know if you've heard Selena and listeners, that's the word. Selena and listeners. NIB is set to increase this year, right? So this was discussed, I think it was last year, when they were talking about getting a slight increase, right, of about 1.5 to 2%. However, the Prime Minister came out and he dismissed those claims, and he said, we're gonna try and figure out how to do this without raising contributions, because we don't want to put the strain on the Bahamian people, right? So almost a year later, literally almost exactly a year later after that whole debacle, right? They're now saying that they have no choice but to increase the contributions. So if the government does not decide to raise NIB contributions, they will lose $95 million. NIB pays out about $27 million a month in pensions. However, they only collect $23 million in contributions, which means they are losing $4 million per month, and that alone adds up to $48 million at the end of the year. And these figures don't include other benefits being collected, such as unemployment, maternity, death, injuries. So none of these are included in this. That's just one aspect of it. So the other 30 some million is for other benefits, right, that they would lose throughout the course of the year. It was said that if we do not increase, do an increase, then NIB won't be sustainable anymore. And I know a lot of people don't like this, which rightfully so, right? We're already going through hard times. Inflation is sky high. Eggs just come down from $7 to now five something. Gas all over the place. Gas was at a what, a whopping $6 a few months ago, and now it went down and it's back up to 5.50 something or 60 something, whatever it is. So, the cost of living is high, and wages don't, well, the minimum wage doesn't match it. Of course, we just had an increase in minimum wage, but it's still a big gap between the wage and the cost of living, right? So, of course, nobody wants more money to get taken out of their paycheck. Nobody wants that. it's never been a good time when you think about it. And they were like, this has been put off for so long because we're always thinking about, oh, it's not a good time, it's not a good time, it's not a good time. And I don't think it's ever going to be a good time to increase something that you don't have a choice of doing. I think you just have to do it if it's going to benefit us in the long run. And I feel like NIB is something that needs to be looked at every single year, the same way how I feel about wages. Minimum wage needs to be looked at every year and adjusted based on inflation, because at the end of the day, inflation is going to happen. So as time goes on, things increase, the wages should increase too. And if and other bills increase, so it would only be logical that NIB would also increase because the cost of everything is would be going up, you know? So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. I think it was kind of inevitable. We don't like it, but it's just the sad fact of the model. And it's something that we're gonna have to take on, unfortunately.
Touche. I just had palpitations as you were talking, but it is what it is.
What you mean, palpitations, Lena?
Palpitations is palpitations.
Why?
Whew.
Why you open palpitations?
It's ruffle chill.
Yeah, it is. It's very rough for the average Bahamian, for the working class. And it's difficult. It's hard to swallow. It's hard to want to get up and continue to fight just to survive. It's difficult. So I definitely understand the strife of the average working class Bahamian. I get it. But like I said, the fact of the matter is, if it's either we pay the extra 1.5 to 2%, or NIB becomes completely obsolete. So we gotta take the, but that's why I said I think the government needs to just be more proactive instead of reactive. Because like I said, if we do a yearly, I'm pretty sure they do, probably, I would hope that they do. I think they do a yearly like review of their numbers and stuff. So if you do that and you say, okay, well, we're losing X, Y, and Z, so we need to increase by this amount, then it becomes a daily, not a daily, it becomes an annual thing, so people get used to it. The same way how we was complaining about VAT, but we got used to VAT. Not saying that it should be what they wanted, 20% originally or 15%. Not saying it should be all of that, but the fact of the matter is, taxes are necessary to the running of a country. The same way how NIB needs more contributions in order to stay afloat. So moving on, the next thing that I wanted to touch on was, a few weeks ago, the young mother, wife, friend, the daughter, Ginesis Siminadavo, passed away at in hospital, and her video on Facebook went viral. Actually, she was explaining her experience with needing blood, and how she was approached and how she thought she was gonna get blood, but was approached a few days later saying that, oh, she needs to get people to come in and bring blood. So with that being said, her husband and other people created a foundation, her name, the Ginesis Siminadavo Foundation, and they, along with Alpha Phi, Alpha Fraternity, and other sponsors, collaborated to host a blood donation drive at the University of the Bahamas, and over 300 people had pre-registered to go and donate. And obviously, you also had walk-ups as well. And apparently, this is the fraternity's third annual blood drive. And a sponsor, Craig, of the blood drive, Craig Flowers, said that Kenise and her husband had approached him actually 8 months prior to this event even happening to discuss holding a blood drive. However, she passed away, as unfortunately. I think hosting, well, having blood drives like this, especially from private entities, is really good because, PMH is always saying like how they don't have enough blood and stuff like that. And they say that one pint of blood could save three people, I think, is with the statistic that they gave on the news. So I think that's absolutely amazing that more people are actually pitching in, and a lot more awareness is being brought to the fact that, the hospital is low on blood, and in order to save lives and in order to help professionals do their job, in some cases they're gonna need blood. So I think this is really good. I think we need to keep this front and center. I think we need to stay on this so that, we don't have to hear more stories like Miss Darvel, because it is really unfortunate that she passed away as a result of that.
I think it is an effective initiative. And I would encourage all Bahamians to, it doesn't have to be every blood drive, but at least try to donate, because you never know when it's your time, even if it's a share, because not everybody can donate blood, as I found out when I went to go. But even sharing the flyer, encouraging others to go, even just word of mouth, you never know how far your words can go. But that's still supporting in and of itself, because today for you, tomorrow for me. And sometimes these faces mean nothing to you until it's one of your loved ones, and even yourself on that flyer. Then it puts a lot of things in perspective. So the Bible talks about, don't be mocked, what you sow you reap. So don't think that you're gonna, fly by and just, not support. And then, a miracle or blessing is going to happen when it's your time. That's just the way the world operates. And so, like I say, even if it's a share, a like, word of mouth, or you physically going and donating, just get on board with it, because it's really a rising issue within our country. And like you mentioned, Shanae, if the blood drives are successful, and the statistics says it's only three pints can save three people, and we have thousands of persons within the Bahamas, so imagine if everybody regularly make it a habit to give as often as they could. It can change our, at least one aspect of our health system.
Yeah, and I think, a lot of times we just sit here and we say, oh, we need change, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that, oh, we need to do the next, and we criticize. And constructive criticism is good. It helps organizations and people to be better. But I feel like if you want change too as a person, you have to try your best to partake in that change. And we were complaining about the state of the hospital and how they could let this woman pass away and not, communicate with her effectively that she needs blood, right? But another way that we could help mitigate this problem is to make sure that blood is there in the first place. So maybe if I'm not saying that this is what I would could would have happened, but I'm saying it is a possibility that maybe if they had her blood there in the first place, that they wouldn't have to come back days later and tell her, hey, you don't have the blood, X, Y, and Z, blah, blah, blah. Granted, that should have been done from the get-go, but I'm just saying. So if we could all go there and give blood on a regular basis and try our best to keep the blood bank at a satisfactory level, then we can possibly change the lives of many. People don't have to be out here putting their face on flyers, sending it around asking for blood. And I can't imagine how heart-wrenching, how scary that must be, because I wouldn't know what to do. I like you're sitting there waiting at the mercy of others, basically. And that's a very uncomfortable situation to be in. And if people are, I know myself, I could not be able to, I would not be able to sit still and be like, wow, I really have to sit down and hope and pray that someone comes in and gives the blood that I need so that I can survive. I truly can't imagine how that must make people feel. So just let's get out and donate so that we don't have to get people to feel that way anymore. And I feel like maybe that's kind of like the silver lining with the healthcare issues that have been happening involving blood lately, that maybe we can stop, I don't want to say stop putting the blame, but maybe we could start to take action as citizens and to be more involved and to help, like I said, save the lives of others.
You can't say stop putting the blame, because we are only as strong as our weakest link, and it's easy to criticize and critique from an area of comfort. But like I mentioned, if you're not doing anything about the situation, you're just as much a part of the problem as it is. So you could it's easy for you to open up and talk about how bad our health system is, and how rundown our hospital is, and it's easy to point and say, oh, the government has to do this and government has to do what, that. But if you're really that tired about it, if you're really that thing about it, what are you doing about it? Are you the littlest things, even so much as you do an initiative to get needed health system health healthcare equipment or oh Lord, tools, not tools, but like blankets, gloves, these things that are, are needed. Are you at least trying? Are you at least making initiative? Like I said, it's very easy, but obviously we know our government needs help. And at the end of the day, guess what? It ain't them who's suffering. They have money. So when they need medical, attention, that private jet never fails. That insurance kicks in very easily. It's
Yep.
us. It's the people at the low end of the chain who is at the mercy of the healthcare system in the country. So what are we doing about it?
Yeah, I definitely agree. We have to try and help ourselves because, like you said, today it's you, but tomorrow it could be me. And like I said, we like to point the finger, we like to blame. And I'm not saying that there aren't issues, like you said, within the healthcare system, but let's try to do everything that we can as citizens, as Bahamians, to help each other out. If we know that blood is a problem, if we've realized that, bro, the blood bank is so dry that they literally can't be giving out blood without getting it back, then we know what the issue is. We know how to fix it. Let's fix it. So I implore all of you who are able to donate blood to go ahead and do that and try to make it a regular practice for yourself, because one pint of blood could equal three lives, three people that you save. And guess what? That's your good deed of the day or the month or 3 months. One for every month. So going back to the topic of the turmoil that's happening in Haiti. On Thursday, the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, I think I pronounced it, said that he plans to deploy the Royal Canadian Navy to Haiti's coast to conduct surveillance and provide support as a bid to address their deepening crisis. And he has committed $10 million, wow, to support the International Organization for Migration to strengthen the protection and the resilience of Haitian women and children along the Dominican Republic border and in Haiti. And then an additional 12.3 million investment in humanitarian assistance. He was also a guest at the CARICOM meetings held here and addressed regional leaders and delegates. So he let them know that he was deploying people to Haiti. Yeah, so during his address to at CARICOM, he said that Haiti is confronted with unrelenting gang violence, political turmoil, and corruption. Armed groups are committing murder, rape, and other gender-based violence, kidnapping innocent people, and recruiting children to terrorize and subjugate people. It hits close to home, not only in the region, but also in Canada with our strong Haitian diaspora community. The toll of human suffering in Haiti weighs heavily on me. As Canadians, our fundamental objective is to ease the suffering and empower Haitians to turn to their future. We've been working closely to help address the political, security, and humanitarian crisis in Haiti. Canada will also provide $1.8 million to target illicit drug trafficking and strengthen the border and maritime security in the Caribbean. And yeah. And he also committed $44 million from his nation to a new capital funding for climate change and biodiversity initiatives throughout the Caribbean. So he's doing quite a lot, isn't he? He has a lot of dollars to
I was just about
give
to say,
out.
kudos to you, sir.
Yes, use those resources, President Trudeau. Yes. Wow. But I didn't even realize that they had such a large group of immigrants there. I didn't realize that. I only automatically thought of America. But
Oh no,
yeah.
you need to think about the Bahamas when it when.
No, I mean, I know the Bahamas, but I mean, besides us, I was only thinking of America. I didn't even think the state of Canada. But I mean, it's good to see that they are willing to help and that there are people that are willing to help. And I am hoping that him, along with other members of the Caribbean are able to help them, get a hold on what's going on, because to be living in a country that's in a state of anarchy, I can't imagine how scary that must be, because I was watching a true crime documentary and I was well it was, it wasn't really true crime, but it was like it was a documentary about things that happened in different places and about wanted people. And it's basically talking about this man in Nigeria, who basically allowed these people to bring in a bunch of weapons, right? And then the people took the weapons and started doing mass murder, and
Jeez.
it sent the country into like turmoil. And like I was watching that and seeing like how people reacted to that and how like they were sh the people were shutting down the police, and girl, it was a lot. So I have not lived it, but I can imagine how difficult that must be for them. And me personally, I don't ever want to live through that. So I'm glad that people are empathizing with them and trying to help them. People who have the resources to do so, that is.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great initiative.
I just hope it's a catalyst to it acts also as a catalyst to for other nations to step in as well, because I believe that for so long the country has been demonized, so to speak, when really and truly they were, it was intentional to place that country in the predicament that it is. In so I'm just glad, I'm just hoping that there's some sort of like what's the word, domino effect based on what the president of Canada is planning on doing, is doing.
The president of Canada, I know that one of the things that he mentioned was that, corruption was a big thing. So I'm saying that I hope that either they are sending people there with some type of relief, like on the ground to allocate these resources themselves, or that they're using maybe an humanitarian group or something, because I would be questioning now if we're saying that there's corruption at all, blindly send money there and know that the money is being used to do the things that it was sent for. So I'm hoping that they have some type of plan in place to ensure that the money's being used for what it's meant for. So
Security as well.
that's my only concern regarding that, because that's a lot of money to be sent in for it not to be used in the right way, because that's millions of
Security as well for those persons.
dollars. Yeah, that's millions of dollars. So I am hoping that, that's what they're doing, which I'm sure that's probably with it. Also, following the Canadian president's announcement of sending troops and armed forces to Haiti, Jamaica and the Bahamas are also discussing sending manned power to Haiti to help with the turmoil. To help with the turmoil. So this article says, Minister of Foreign Affairs Fred Mitchell said Bahamas and Jamaica have already committed. Keywords now, already committed to sending manpower to the struggling nation. This was announced at the opening press conference earlier this week. And the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Darren Henfield, adding that he believes that the Bahamas has the right approach.
Oh, really? My thoughts on that is that I hope that they, it's a noble thing that they did, to say that we will send in reinforcement to those, to Haiti to help them in their time of need. I just hope that they also give the proper training to those law enforcers to deal with situations such as that, not only where it comes to, not only when it comes to combat, but as well as hospitality and conducting themselves, because at the end of the day, Haiti is in the position that it is in because, of outside forces already coming in. And you don't want to be grouped in that same matter, in manner, in that cloak of, doing the good for the country, but, just being as bad as the Makuts and stuff like that. So we are a small nation, but I have no doubt that our law enforcers are up to, the calling. It's just that we need to ensure that as a country, we, train them in the best manner possible so that true good can come from it and it's not just a continuous cycle. And sure, and as well to protect them as well, because at the end of the day, this is our own we're sending out. And so we want to ensure that they have the latest equipment that they need, the skills, the training, and all the rest of that stuff to answer to that call.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I think it's great that we want to help them. I know a lot of Bahamians are not gonna take too kindly to the government deciding that they're gonna send off our armed forces to another country to help defend it. I know that's not gonna go over well with them. However, I'd still like to say we are brother people, and I think if it was us, I would like for someone to intervene.
At what
So,
cost?
at what cost? I'd say send the whole defense. I mean, I don't know how much they plan on sending, but I'm saying if it's feasible and if you can and you want to help, fine. But that is a valid point. At what cost? How is this going to negatively impact the Bahamas? That's something that we also need to take into consideration, because I'm sure when you're sending these officers off, they're gonna have. They can't just be getting the regular pay because they literally going into like almost, I would almost go as far to say it's a war zone. So my question is, are they gonna be paid extra for this? Or because I mean, I know we like to say like they sign up for it, but did they really though?
That's see,
Did they really?
that's what I'm that's why I said that they get the needed skill, I mean the needed equipment and training because, right? The Bahamas is an independent country, but it's not an independent country. We claimed independence, but we're still under Britain. Meaning that's the only reason, the reason why, because there's talk of going up of us being becoming a republic and whatever the case may be, yada yada yada. And I am one of those persons who is not all for that just because I don't think we're at the state that we need to be in order to protect our country. And so I believe that, and that's not even speaking against those who are on the law enforcement. I'm not speaking against it, but I just think we still have a ways to go. And so that's why I asked at what cost, because yes, it looks nice to, say we're going to send our men out there, whatever the case may be. But let's think about the negative effects of veterans who come back from in the United States, who come back from these war zones. The ripple effect of what happened, and I'm not saying we're not supposed to, because we are, like you said, we are our brother's keeper, and it they do need help, but that's why I'm asking at what cost. Did we really take a minute to assess how this would look for our country, and as a nation that is still developing, is this the right course of action? Because words, you in a certain setting, you want to make your stance known, you saying that, but you got to remember that you are responsible for these persons' lives and overall the well-being of your country. So when you get exposed to certain things, there's no coming back. So at what cost was this proclamation made? And are we ready for, is our force ready for this type of, situation? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I think these are very, very valid things that we should take into consideration. Like I said, the humanitarian and the empathetic person in me said I would love to help someone in need. But me personally, I am a defense force officer. So
Exactly. So you,
yeah,
it's so comfortable to say these things, but like,
ain't nobody sending me off. Ain't
let's
nobody.
even think about the condition of, post Dorian, when Defense Force officers were sent to these islands that were in need of assistance or whatever the case may be. Have we stopped to even document the effect that it had on them?
Of course not. I think we
The
should though.
circumstances that they were placed in for months on end,
The things they saw.
the things they saw,
Yeah.
the post-traumatic stress that happened afterwards, no. We ain't even let them, they couldn't even catch themselves. And now we made a proclamation to say that we're going to send our troops, who we don't even have enough of to guard our own waters, FYI. But anyway, to go off to a war zone where some of them are not even capable. I'm not, and like I said, I'm not coming after the force. I'm just saying these are things that we really need to look at, where some of them are not even capable of, really handling this. Because I wouldn't say that our country is all rainbows and things, and that they not have seen some things, within their line of work. But we are far more blessed than a lot of countries in these situations where it's like, oh my gosh, like the hell all hell break loose. And so I'm just saying.
No, I agree with you. Like, yeah, they may be trained, but they've never been put in something to, at least I don't think. I don't know of
Yeah, we could be wrong. Y'all could tell
yeah,
us
we
if we're
could be
wrong.
wrong, but I've never seen them being sent off to some place. Like, similar to like how when you in the States when you join up. So when you join the military in the States, you would expect that at some point you're probably gonna go off to war, right? You'd
Yeah.
hope you don't, but that you're prepared for that, right? But I
Yes.
don't think I've ever seen us go to, I could be wrong because I only been on this earth for a short while, but I don't think our modern day defense force have been sent off anywhere to go and fight anybody in any
On
way
that level.
on that level. Of course,
On that
they've dealt with a
level.
lot of things that are very difficult to handle, but I don't think it's ever been to that extent. And like you said, should we sacrifice our people for another country? That's something that we should consider. Like you said, these
I
things
wouldn't
have
even say it's for another country.
long lasting effects.
I would even go a step further. Should we sacrifice our men for the facade, or even
Exactly.
for of like trying to, I guess, further place our country on the map, so to speak, like get some highlight or whatever? Because the question would be yes, because at the end of the day, we've been blessed to have persons help us out in our times of distress. So that answer is yes. But is that truly the motive? So that's a whole different question. That's a whole different can of worms, honestly. Because is that truly the motive?
Yeah, and then I want to know too who was included in this decision. Was
That's
the
why, did you even speak to them? Did you even give them the
yeah,
courtesy before you ask, make
did
the
you speak to
statement?
them?
Like,
Yeah,
was this, because like
or
I
was this
say,
made on a whim?
it's exact, that's what I felt like it was at. Because it's so easy to say these things that sound so good in and of the moment, but we got to remember, yes, we're trying to develop and place ourselves on the map with other countries, but we are not other countries. Nowhere near other countries. We're still developing as it is, and we're still trying to like come back from these economic trials that we've been through. And I just questioned the motive. And it sound good. It sound good. Yes,
Sound good on paper.
it sound good on paper. But hey, oh Jesus. I ain't gonna lie. I really wish you saw my face when you were reading that, because I was like,
Yeah, but it's really something to think about. It's
it
really it's a lot. And yeah, I want to know if they spoke with the Commodore. If they had any type of, or even I don't know if it's just the defense force that they join the center, or maybe the police force as well. Have you spoken to the commissioner of police? Like, because like I said, you're the prime minister or whoever high up who have come to this conclusion, but y'all don't sit and fight in the line every day and deal with criminals. And no, y'all sit in your pretty office and you allow police and defense force to escort you everywhere. And like, you are very heavily protected. So of course you would say something like, and being
You're
as big as
them in your world that they're up to par.
we are
Please,
nowhere near the with the man with the thing in the end, with the Canada Forces name, the Navy, the Royal Caribbean Navy. We are nowhere near that.
oh Lord, the Mounties.
We are not there. We are not there yet. We're trying to get there eventually, but we are nowhere near there yet. So my thing is, and then my question also is too, how much officers Are you trying to send? Is my question number one.
I know,
Because
because
it would have to be big enough to make an impact, right? But then the question is, if you send such a, let's say they decide to send 200 or 300 people, right? I don't know if it'll ever,
not enough.
if it'll be that much. When you think about it, for a country that only has 1,900 Defense Force officers, that would put kind of, and losing them, losing about 50 every year, that
Right.
would put a dent in our resources, our people, when you think about
Right.
it.
That's a serious thing, though.
Exactly. And yeah, so I think these are seriously things that we should consider. And I think that if they did not have conversations with the Commodore and the Commissioner and all of these
They really
people,
need to
I feel
start.
like they really need to have a conversation with them before they make decisions like this. Ultimately, they're the government and they can do whatever they want. I don't want to say whatever, but they could do whatever they want within reason. I do think that it's common courtesy to hear the concerns of these people, because guess what? If they decide to be tomorrow day in Gurn and they protest, which or strike, they still ain't gonna go.
Nope. Like, I really hope we had a conversation and not just going based on, contract where we say you go, you go. So you make these people look bad and they quit. What happening? What could happen?
I'll tell something to think about. I'll tell something to think about. I mean, we could be very headstrong, but we had a very interesting conversation today. We hope
Okay.
that you took insights from things that we said, especially this last topic, and then you truly think about that. I think that was very interesting. But yeah, we had a great conversation today. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Candid. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Candid242, where you can keep abreast on what we're doing and know when new shows are aired. And you can also listen to us on our own Acast website, which is also linked on our Facebook and Instagram page. So see you next week, and keep it real, homies.